This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of DJD and hallux rigidus from the foot and ankle section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Hallux rigidus is a common foot condition characterized by pain and loss of motion of the first MTP joint in adults due to degenerative arthritis. Diagnosis is made with orthogonal radiographs of the foot that may show joint space narrowing and dorsal osteophytes of the first MTP joint. Treatment of early disease consists of a trial of non-operative management with a Morton's extension orthotic. Operative management is indicated for higher grade disease and varies depending on chronicity of symptoms and severity of osteoarthritis. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, the incidence of DJD and hallux rigidus is in 2.5% of patients older than 50 years old. Note that this is the most common location of osteoarthritis in the foot. As far as demographics, females are more affected than males in a 2-to-1 ratio, and this condition is most commonly noted in the 5th and 6th decades of life. Risk factors include a history of trauma to the first MTP joint. This is noted in approximately 80% of patients with unilateral disease. Moving on to the etiology, with respect to pathophysiology, the primary etiology of DJD and hallux rigidus is unknown. However, acute trauma and repetitive microtrauma predispose to arthritic changes. As far as the pathoanatomy, osteophyte formation and degeneration of the cartilage occur dorsally in early stages and progress to involve the entire joint. Anatomic variations of first metatarsal may play a role in arthritic predisposition. This includes things like metatarsus adductus and a long first metatarsal. Associated conditions with DJD and hallux rigidus include orthopedic conditions like sesamoid arthritis and medical conditions like gout and rheumatoid arthritis. Now let's go over some relevant anatomy. As far as the osteology, the first metatarsal is shortest and widest. As far as the neurovascular anatomy, the medial branch of the medial dorsal cutaneous nerve overlies the first MTP joint and can become irritated by dorsal osteophytes. As far as the biomechanics, the first MTP joint carries up to approximately 120% of an individual's body weight with each step. Now, let's go over the classification of DJD and hallux rigidus. And the one to know is the Coughlin and Chernoss classification, which is divided into 5 grades: grade 0, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3, and grade 4. Starting with grade 0, exam findings include stiffness and radiographic findings are normal. Grade 1 corresponds to mild pain at the extremes of motion, and on radiographs, you will find mild dorsal osteophyte and a normal joint space. Grade 2 corresponds to moderate pain with range of motion and is increasingly more constant. Radiographic findings include moderate dorsal osteophyte and less than 50% joint space narrowing. Grade 3 corresponds to significant stiffness, pain at the extremes of range of motion, and no pain at mid-range. Radiographic findings include severe dorsal osteophyte and greater than 50% joint space narrowing. Finally, grade 4 corresponds to significant stiffness, pain at the extremes of range of motion, pain at the mid-range of motion, and radiographic findings are the same as grade 3. Moving on to the presentation of DJD and hallux rigidus, symptoms may include first ray and first MTP joint pain, which is worse with push-off or the lift-off phase of gait. Patients may also have dorsal medial foot paresthesia due to dorsal osteophytes and compression of the medial dorsal cutaneous nerve. Symptoms may also include transfer metatarsalgia. On physical exam, inspection may reveal swelling of the first MTP joint, dorsal prominence over the first MTP joint due to dorsal osteophytes, and severe disease may present with hyperextension deformity. Motion assessment may reveal limited dorsiflexion, as well as pain with terminal dorsiflexion, and know that as the disease progresses, patients develop pain throughout the arc of motion. And finally, motion assessment may also reveal an inverted gait. Neurovascular exam may reveal a decreased push-off strength and decreased sensation over the distal aspect of the medial dorsal foot. Provocative tests include pain with the grind test, which is indicative of severe disease with central chondral wear. Moving on to imaging, recommended views on radiographs include an AP, lateral, sesamoid, and oblique view of the foot. Findings include dorsal osteophytes, joint space narrowing, and subchondral sclerosis and cysts. A CT scan is indicated when there's suspected osteochondral cysts with normal radiographs. CT can also better characterize mild osteoarthritis. Treatment of DJD and hallux rigidus can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes NSAIDs, activity modification, intra-articular injections, and Morton's extension orthotic. This is indicated in grade 0 and 1 disease, and as far as outcomes, there are good short and mid-term pain relief noted in low-grade disease. Operative options include a dorsal chylectomy, a Moberg procedure, which is a dorsal closing wedge osteotomy of the proximal phalanx, a Keller procedure, which is a resection arthroplasty, an MTP joint arthroplasty, MTP joint arthrodesis, and MTP joint arthrodesis with a structural bone graft. So starting with the dorsal chylectomy, indications include grade 1 and 2 disease, select patients with grade 3 disease with primarily pain with terminal dorsiflexion, and shoe wear irritation from dorsal prominence and pain, which is the ideal candidate. Contraindications for a dorsal chylectomy is when pain is located in the mid-range of the joint during passive motion. As far as outcomes with a dorsal chylectomy, know that pain with terminal dorsiflexion is an indicator of good results with dorsal chylectomy. Moving on to a Moberg procedure, which again is a dorsal closing wedge osteotomy of the proximal phalanx, indications include runners with reduced dorsiflexion, and know that 60 degrees is needed to run. And another indication is failure of chylectomy to provide at least 30 to 40 degrees of motion. Moving on to a Keller procedure or a resection arthroplasty, this is indicated in elderly, low-demand patients with significant joint degeneration and loss of motion that allows for rapid rehabilitation. Contraindications include patients with pre-existing rigid hyperextension deformity of the first MTP joint. As far as outcomes, good results have been noted in low-demand elderly patients. There's also a significant risk of joint instability for younger and more active patients. Moving on to MTP joint arthroplasty, this is indicated for grade 3 and 4 disease for patients who wish to preserve joint motion. Contraindications include active infection, insufficient bone stock, and hallux sesamoid arthritis. As far as outcomes, silicone implants may have a good short-term satisfaction rate, but have high long-term failure rate. Know that osteolysis and synovitis cause mid to long-term pain and joint destruction. Know that current implant designs have 80 to 90% survival rates at approximately 5 years. There is no difference in functional outcomes, complications, or satisfaction rates between hemiarthroplasty and total joint arthroplasty. Moving on to MTP joint arthrodesis, this is indicated for grade 3 and 4 disease that is significant joint arthritis. This is the most common procedure for hallux rigidus. As far as outcomes of MTP joint arthrodesis, there is a 90 to 100% fusion rate, as well as a 95% satisfaction rate. Finally, moving on to MTP joint arthrodesis with the structural bone graft, indications for a structural bone graft include a first MT shortening that cannot be adequately rebalanced with the lesser metatarsal osteotomy, usually from shortening greater than 5 millimeters, and is most commonly seen with a failed MTP arthroplasty. Another indication for structural bone graft is significant proximal phalanx bone loss with inadequate remaining bone for fixation without compromising the IP joint. Finally, another indication is a first metatarsal shortening with loss of medial support of the second toe predisposing to varus at the second MTP joint. Now, let's talk about some of these management techniques in a bit more detail. So starting with NSAIDs, activity modification, intra-articular injections, and Morton's extension orthotic. As far as the activity modifications, be sure to avoid activities that lead to excessive great toe dorsiflexion. As far as intra-articular injections, both corticosteroid and sodium hyaluronate injections have been shown to significantly improve pain scores at 4 and 8-week follow-up in low-grade disease. As far as types of orthotics, Morton's extension with a stiff foot plate is the mainstay of treatment. This extends past the first MTP joint, providing a stiff construct that allows minimal dorsiflexion at the articular surface. A stiff-soled shoe and shoebox stretching may also be used. Moving on to dorsal chylectomy, the technique removes up to 30% of the dorsal aspect of the metatarsal head, along with the dorsal osteophyte resection. Resection of greater than 30% may lead to joint subluxation. The goal of surgery is to obtain 70 to 90% of dorsiflexion intraoperatively. Moving on to a Moberg procedure, which is a dorsal closing wedge osteotomy of the proximal phalanx, the technique increases dorsiflexion by decreasing the plantar flexion arc of motion. Moving on to a Keller procedure or a resection arthroplasty, the technique involves removing the base of the first proximal phalanx. It also involves interposition, and know that there is a risk of hyperextension or a cock-up deformity, as well as weakness with push-off and transfer metatarsalgia, which is decreased with capsular interposition. Moving on to an MTP joint arthroplasty, the technique can be a hemiarthroplasty or a total joint arthroplasty. A hemiarthroplasty will have a unipolar implant that is designed to replace the articular surface of the metatarsal head or the proximal phalanx base. The benefits compared to a total joint arthroplasty is that it maintains the length of the first ray, and there is easier conversion to arthrodesis if necessary. Moving on to a total joint arthroplasty, first and second generation, which involves silastic implants, which is made of silicone rubber. However, keep in mind that there is a high failure rate of approximately 60% with silicone wear, osteolysis, and implant failure. Third generation are metal implants with press-fit fixation. And fourth generation are metal implants with threaded stem fixation. Moving on to MTP joint arthrodesis, as far as the technique, compression, and internal fixation can be achieved with wires, pins, lag screws, dual cross screws, and plates. Know that a dorsal plate with a compression screw is biomechanically the strongest construct. As far as the preferred surgical alignment, you will have 10 to 15 degrees of valgus in relation to the metatarsal shaft, 15 degrees of dorsiflexion in relation to the floor, and know that the best way to assess this intraoperatively is with a foot plate to simulate weight bearing with 4 to 8 millimeters of clearance of the toe from the plate. As far as complications, fusion in excessive dorsiflexion causes pain at the tip of the toe, over the IP joint, and under the first metatarsal with excessive dorsiflexion. Fusion in excessive plantar flexion causes increased pressure at the tip of the toe. And finally, fusion in excessive valgus increases the risk of IP joint degeneration. Finally, moving on to MTP joint arthrodesis with structural bone graft, know that the technique involves a structural bone graft which is used to restore metatarsal length. A tricortical iliac crest allograft is most commonly used. Now, let's go over some complications. The ones to know include a failed arthroplasty, non-union, first MTP joint cock-up deformity, and Hallux IP joint osteoarthritis. Risk factors for failed arthroplasty include early generation implants, specifically silicone implants. The treatment is implant resection, synovectomy if there is isolated grade toe pain. Treatment can also include implant resection, bone grafting, and arthrodesis if there is grade toe pain with lesser toe metatarsalgia. Moving on to non-union, this has an incidence of 5 to 10% after arthrodesis. Know that 33% of patients with a non-union are asymptomatic. Treatment is revision arthrodesis with bone grafting. Moving on to a first MTP joint cock-up deformity, risk factors include Achiller resection arthroplasty. Treatment is a first MTP joint arthrodesis. Finally, moving on to Hallux IP joint osteoarthritis, the incidence is 15% of patients following Hallux MTP joint arthrodesis. Risk factors include Hallux MTP joint arthrodesis, and as far as treatment, these patients are usually asymptomatic. Finally, let's end this review session talking about prognosis. As far as the natural history of disease, know that radiographic progression may not always correlate with symptom progression. As far as return to activity, there is a 96% patient satisfaction rate after first MTP joint arthrodesis with respect to postoperative activity level. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 45-year-old carpenter reports pain during terminal dorsiflexion and restricted range of motion of the great toe. An X-ray reveals mild osteoarthritis of the first metatarsophalangeal joint and a prominent dorsal osteophyte. Orthotics have failed to provide relief. What is the most appropriate intervention at this time? And the choices are 1. Chylectomy, 2. Lapidus procedure, 3. First metatarsophalangeal arthrodesis, 4. Metatarsophalangeal resurfacing, and 5. Chevron osteotomy. The correct answer to this question is 1. Chylectomy. So chylectomy, or a first metatarsal osteotomy, for treatment of hallux rigidus will relieve dorsal impingement that is usually the source of pain in patients with this condition. Chylectomy is recommended for mild to moderate deformity. Arthrodesis is the treatment of choice following failed chylectomy or where advanced degenerative changes are present, such as grade 4 hallux rigidus and grade 3, where less than 50% of the metatarsal head cartilage remains at the time of surgery. Patients can also try non-operative options such as molded shoe inserts or rocker bottom shoes. And moving on to the final question. A 42-year-old heavy laborer had a fusion of his left first metatarsophalangeal joint for severe arthritis approximately 9 months ago. He states that the pain in his great toe has resolved, but he has developed progressive pain at the plantar aspect of his second metatarsophalangeal joint and has noticed a new deformity to the second toe. In what position was the first toe fused? And the choices are 1. Toe is fused in a varus position, 2. Toe is fused in a valgus position, 3. Toe is fused in a plantar flexion position, 4. Toe is fused in a shortened position, and 5. Toe is fused in a dorsiflex position. The correct answer to this question is 4. Toe is fused in a shortened position. So the patient in the question stem is demonstrating signs of transfer metatarsalgia due to the great toe being fused in a shortened position. To quickly review, hallux rigidus is arthritis of the first metatarsal phalangeal joint. Arthrodesis is usually indicated in more advanced arthritis. The toe should be fused in 10 to 15 degrees of valgus in relation to the metatarsal shaft and 15 degrees of dorsiflexion in relation to the floor. The strongest construct is a dorsal plate with a compression screw. Fusing the toe in an excessively shortened position leads to increased pressure on the second metatarsal, otherwise known as transfer metatarsalgia, as well as a varus deformity of the second toe secondary to loss of medial support from the great toe. Coughlin and Shernus reviewed 110 patients who previously had either a chylectomy or arthrodesis for symptomatic hallux rigidus. They found that the chylectomy group had significant improvement in dorsiflexion and total motion. Both the arthrodesis and chylectomy group had a significant improvement in postoperative pain and AOFAS score, and 97% had good or excellent results. They concluded that chylectomy has predictable success in grades 1 and 2 cases, while arthrodesis is successful in patients with grades 3 and 4. Lau and Daniels retrospectively reviewed 19 patients with grade 2 who underwent chylectomy and 11 patients with grade 3 who underwent interpositional arthroplasty. They found that the chylectomy group had higher mean AOFAS scores. However, postoperative motion, VAS pain scale, and SF36 scores were similar. Interpositional arthroplasty was more likely to have weakness in the great toe. They concluded that chylectomy is a reliable method of pain relief for moderate hallux rigidus and that interpositional arthroplasty for severe hallux rigidus should be considered a salvage procedure with less reliable results. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, a toe fused in varus would not create problems with transfer metatarsalgia but could lead to problems with shoe wear, especially shoes with a narrow toe box. Answer 2, a toe fused in excessive valgus can cause pressure on the second toe and lead to the formation of a soft corn or ulceration on the second toe. Answer 3, a toe that is fused in an excessively plantar flex position can cause excessive pressure at the tip of the toe, as well as lead to altered gait mechanics as he is unable to roll over the toe, leading to excessive lateral foot pressure. And finally, answer 5, a toe fused in excessive dorsiflexion can cause pain at the tip of the toe, IP joint, and over the first metatarsal head. That's all for this review about DJD and hallux rigidus. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.